Welcome to Under the Dome, the State Journal Register's podcast about Illinois politics and government. I'm Bernie Schoenberg, the political writer and columnist here. I've got sitting here with me Doug Finke, our State House reporter. Doug, welcome. And Angie Muse, our executive editor, has the day off. Doug, this is the last podcast we're doing before next Tuesday's election. Of course, many people have voted already, so they can just chill. But how's it looking? We've got the governor on a bus tour. We've got J.B. Pritzker putting out a very nice ad about all of us are in this together in Illinois, and he cares about downstate. How's things looking?
Well, I mean, a lot of candidates besides just the gubernatorial candidates are putting out their so-called closing ads right now that are more of a feel-good type of thing than the straight attack ads. It doesn't mean they've stopped doing the attack ads, but they're trying to bring things to a conclusion and hi, I'm a nice person. I'm going to work hard for you. And most cases, they say vote for me. Occasionally, they apparently forget to put that tagline on there. But in any event, at least it's a sign that this very, very long campaign season is finally winding down.
Right. There have been, as usual, some controversies in the last week. I think you wrote the story about a group that has been backing Governor Rauner, ABATE of Illinois, which is a brotherhood aimed toward education. It's actually an oddly very strong. It's a group that is for motorcycle enthusiasts and safety. They seek legislation that they think are good for motorcyclists. They have always fought a helmet law because they say they want the freedom not to wear a helmet and have their range of vision restricted, or for whatever reason, despite the fact that emergency room doctors sometimes disagree that it's a great idea not to have a helmet law in Illinois. And the governor is an avid motorcyclist. It's one of the favorite things he does is get on his Harley. He does it. He talks about it. And they had endorsed him, and then they didn't. Tell us a little about that.
Well, it comes down to an executive order that the governor issued last week in conjunction with the Department of Transportation. The idea is to make sure that Illinois stays competitive or at the forefront of the autonomous vehicle movement. It authorizes criteria for when autonomous vehicles can be tested on Illinois roads.
And, of course, autonomous means driverless,
right?
Which is why people might get the kind of shivers down their spine if they're on a motorcycle and there's this vehicle coming with nobody in the driver's seat.
Well, and there have been some unfortunate incidents involving autonomous vehicles in other states. But the governor apparently in IDOT decided that they wanted Illinois in a position to be able to capitalize on research that's going on with these vehicles. ABATE disagreed with that, to say the least. They said that the technology for autonomous vehicles is not well developed enough to keep motorcyclists safe. Motorcycles obviously have a much smaller profile than a truck or a car or something else you're going to encounter on a highway. So they were very concerned that this could lead to injuries or fatalities among motorcyclists, if these vehicles malfunction in some way. They also said the testing criteria that was laid out by IDOT to ensure the safety of these vehicles was inadequate in their mind, and all these factors together resulted in them saying that we are withdrawing our endorsement of the governor.
Right. I know that someone who lobbies for them, an advocate for them, is Josh Witkowski of Springfield. He's been somewhat politically involved in town, and he put out a press release, and I think it said that, you know, we thought we had certain factors, you know, in a discussion with the administration. It didn't exactly come through, so I know they were just very unhappy.
Right. This is kind of curious because this is not the first endorsement that's been withdrawn. It's first one with the governor. But, of course, Sam McCann had a couple of pro-life groups withdraw their endorsements of his candidacy after he sent out some mailers critical of some pro-life Republican lawmakers because he said that they weren't true Republicans. They were basically Rauner Republicans who he does not think represent conservative principles.
Right, and that's just because I think they said nice things about the governor, even though the governor, you know, signed the bill allowing public funding of abortion, that kind of thing.
So. But yeah, I don't recall many instances in the past where an endorsement's been made by some organization and then later withdrawn, especially close to the election.
Interesting. One other development in the campaign since we last talked, there was the trip over the weekend of President Donald Trump to Murfreesboro, mostly to help Mike Bost, who is running for Congress in Southern Illinois, but also appearing with him were Rodney Davis, who's running in the 13th congressional district, and also a congressman from up north, who is in a tight race, and I will think of his name in a minute. But the governor has avoided speaking about President Trump for a long time, and during the last couple of years, and then has started to say he likes the economics that President Trump has, you know, the tax plan, etc. He ended up going to this event, but not being on stage, not being recognized by the president, wearing his motorcycle outfit and a hat about back the blue, which I believe was in reference to police. And so it just turned into a very kind of an interesting situation.
It was, I think, widely regarded as a snub by the president of the governor, and people pointed out that the governor or the president managed to work in the California governor's candidate's name.
John Cox, who was actually from Illinois, that's right. And Randy Hultgren was the other congressman from Illinois who didn't make it down to, and he's from the central part of northern Illinois, who also appeared on stage there.
So the president mentioned the names of a number of other Republicans, just not the governor of the state of Illinois, who was in attendance at this thing. So I don't know how you can read that as other than a snub, but that's the way a lot of people apparently did read it.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting kind of a thing as to, you know, where the conservative base is. As we know, the governor, Governor Rauner, faced a very strong challenge from State Representative Jeannie Ives of Wheaton in the primary, only won by a few points. Sam McCann of Macoupin County, who was running, he's, you know, elected to the state senate as a Republican and running as a third-party candidate under the Conservative Party, has been running ads funded by this labor union and its allies, Local 150 Operating Engineers, basically saying, you know, I'm the real conservative, and then there's Cass Jackson, who is the libertarian candidate, who is basically saying he's conservative, certainly on fiscal issues. Libertarians are not necessarily considered conservative on social issues because they don't think government should intervene in a lot of things. But these are kind of the problems that both of those people could erode the voting base of Governor Rauner, so we'll see where it goes. In the meantime, J.B. Pritzker hasn't had a total smooth ride toward the end of things because there was another incident in his campaign last week, Doug, I think since we spoke here, about a campaign staffer who made a bad choice.
Yeah, I mean, this was such inopportune timing, not that there was any good timing for something like this, but right at the time that Rauner's ad was diverting attention away from the various problems that the Pritzker campaign has seen recently.
This would be the ad with the marriage of Pritzker and Madigan and the preacher.
They bleeped out obscenity in the thing. It turns out a picture surfaces on the internet, of course, of a staffer who was put on blackface for reasons that can't escape any rational thinking, but and it was posted. Posted by another staffer, right? Besides, which, and given the problems the campaign has had with the sexual discrimination lawsuit that was filed, racial discrimination lawsuit, why anybody would think that was in any way funny or appropriate under any circumstances, but least of all when the campaign is facing those kinds of issues, is
right. And of course, it was a young white staffer, clearly, you know, with some kind of grease paint on their face. As Megyn Kelly recently found out at the national level, blackface is a much more serious issue than if you look at the history of it, and, you know, the discriminatory history of it over centuries, really. It's a deeper problem than people know. Those staffers were first quickly suspended and then fired. So clearly, the Pritzker campaign has showed some growing pains in the last few weeks, and that lawsuit the federal lawsuit, as you said, with 9 African-American Pritzker staffers, many of whom had only started within the last 6 months, and one Hispanic staffer filed a lawsuit saying that they were sent to the poorer locations and not given reason or opportunity to advance. And the Pritzker people have fought back saying it's wrong, but because the process in court moves so slowly, we haven't seen progress on that. And of course, JB's running mate, Juliana Stratton, an African-American state representative from Chicago, she obviously is a good ally for him in this and has, as they travel around the state and as they will be stopping before the election at Springfield's airport, I think on Monday, they're certainly trying to put those problems behind them. So we'll see.
Well, the reaction to the campaign, though, was, in my mind, a little questionable because mm-hmm. the initial reaction when reporter that broke the story obviously called the campaign to get a response, and they said the 2 staffers had been suspended. Well, then as the story picked up steam during the day and the heat started really piling up, then the campaign said, well, upon further investigation, we decided to fire these people. And it just, I hate to see anybody lose a job, but it seems in this case that situation probably required some really decisive action from the get-go, and instead of this, well, we're going to suspend them first, okay, now we're going to fire them, and just, I think, kind of made them appear a little wishy-washy on it.
Interesting. And again, we've got a situation where both candidates for governor, one of them is worth about $1 billion. That would be Rauner. And he was a first-time candidate. He's clearly had some growing pains with changes of staff over his first 4 years. As things went oddly, and including the 2-year budget impasse and then the budget that passed with a tax increase over the governor's veto and then a change of staff and then another change of staff about 80 days later. So things happen. And of course, J.B. Pritzker is a billionaire, more than $3 billion he is worth, the Forbes magazine tells us. And he's new to this as well, other than I think it was a 1998 run for Congress. So he says he's dealt with government a lot, but he will find out if he wins that there are lots of decisions that have to be made quickly. And if you mess them up, you hear about it.
You certainly do.
And then Doug Finke writes a story or something. So the attorney general race continues to be an interesting one. State Senator Kwame Raoul from Chicago, who 14 years ago replaced Barack Obama in the U.S. In the Illinois Senate when Obama went on to the U.S. Senate, and is running against Erica Harold, an attorney, Harvard-educated from Urbana, who, of course, was also Miss America in 2003. That race has been seen as tightening in recent weeks and is perhaps one of the better, is considered a good Republican opportunity for pickup. Former President Obama just released today as we are talking here, a radio ad for Kwame Raoul saying that, he is precisely the attorney general we need. He'll protect our health care, protect a woman's right to choose, protect our environment, and protect our right to vote. Interestingly, Erica Harold says she certainly will protect legal rights for people, but she is pro-life on abortion, for example, and that has yielded some very strong mailers against her from the Democrats. So it's just an interesting race, and is it still viewed, do you think, Doug, that it's tightening, or is there any kind of a wave forming either direction?
Well, I think your assessment is entirely correct about the Republicans view this as a seat that they can pick up. You're dealing with incumbent Democrats in other statewide offices, except, of course, the governor. So this is an open seat. There's a pitch being made by Erica Harold that if you elect her, she can act as a check on all the rest of this.
If Democrats run everything, right?
And, that, in fact, may resonate with some people, or at least enough to for down ballot race that it could make a difference.
Yeah, and we'll see where it goes with the Obama endorsement. Clearly, I think I think it's fair to say Barack Obama is more popular with more people in Chicago, where most of the voters in Illinois are, than in the rest of the state. And I think a radio ad like the one with the former president certainly will help Senator Raul in that territory. And it kind of depends where turnout is and how turnout is in different parts of the state.
And the president's going to be in Chicago this weekend doing a Get Out the Vote rally with Pritzker, among others, and thought the governor's response to that was kind of interesting. He said that's an indication that the race is tighter than people are saying, or that the polls are saying. I don't know if that's correct or not, but at least that's the governor's read on things, and he's trying to get that message out that there's still within striking distance.
Right, and certainly the other view is that President Obama's home, he still maintains the home in Chicago, right. And there are other candidacies to help, including, as I mentioned before, Congressman Randy Holcomb. His opponent is a Democrat named Lauren Underwood, who has been kind of she's been a surprise potential winner on the scene, and that's certainly someone that I'll bet you President Obama mentions when he's there. And we could also note that Joe Biden, the former vice president, was up north and then also in southern Illinois helping Pritzker and also congressional candidates just in the past few days. Doug, let's talk quickly about just something that actually has to do with state government directly, teachers' retirement system. They put out a report on, their contribution in the next state budget is going to have to be, if I'm correct, $4.8 billion, up about $400 million from the current year. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The Board of Trustees had a meeting this past week. And as part of their whole process, they have to do an initial estimate of how much they're going to need as a state contribution. This is not set in stone yet. There's further process for them to go through, but it's going to be pretty accurate, and it's a 10% increase, and that's going to put further pressure on the budget because that's $400 million now that's not going to be available for some other program.
I think it's fair to say whoever becomes the next governor either continues or becomes the new one, that budget is going to be a biggie,
and it's going to be difficult. It always is anymore.
Right. I should mention also the very hot race in central Illinois, which extends down to part of southern Illinois, the 13th Congressional District. It also goes to Champaign, Bloomington, Edwardsville, Springfield. Rodney Davis, the congressman, versus Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. This is a race that continues to be very close. Davis has taken an interesting tack. He's trying to make Betsy Londrigan another Madigan clone, and he actually has done an ad. There was a bill before Obamacare was even passed in 2008. Mary Flowers, a state representative from Chicago, proposed a Massachusetts-style plan for Illinois, for like universal health care just within Illinois. It passed one committee. It never got a floor vote. There were several co-chair or co-sponsors, and Mike Madigan was one of those. So now the Rodney Davis campaign alleges that there's a Madigan-Londrigan plan for universal health care that will bankrupt the country and cost $32 trillion, which is a 10-year figure for the super Bernie Sanders plan that Betsy Londrigan says she's not for. This all led Steve Brown, spokesman for Madigan, to say that it is desperate Davis because it's clear that he knows Betsy Londrigan is getting close, or else why would you make stuff up like this? Doug, I know I'm covering that race closer than you are, but this whole Madigan thing, I don't know. I guess we'll see within a week how effective it is for many Republican candidates to align their Democratic opponents with Mike Madigan, if there's a legitimate reason to do not.
Well, Madigan obviously is not a popular politician, it's one thing to link a General Assembly candidate to Madigan and say he's in his pocket or something. A congressional candidate saying they're under the thumb of Madigan seems to be a bit of a stretch, but obviously the anti-Madigan sentiment The Republicans think that plays well any part of the state for any race, so it's, right. That's what they're going to do.
We should notice that Betsy Landrigan, of course, has never been in the legislature, so that's one thing. She does have one fundraising committee, and I think it's where they get mail, where she partners with the Democratic Party of Illinois, so that's how the Davis campaign calls her a Madigan fundraiser, when she doesn't really raise funds for Madigan, but there are some funds raised for mail for her that might come from the Democratic Party or something of that nature. So we're seeing a lot of this. We will see all kinds of things happening, and I don't know, I probably speak for Doug as well as myself, that we are really happy that the election is just a few days away.
You speak for me.
Because obviously every story that people like us write at a time like this has at least two sides to it, and there can be pretty strong disagreements among either candidates or their operatives about how to put things and what the spin should be. So it makes the story more difficult to write, but voters have the final say on Tuesday if you haven't voted already. With that, that'll do it for this week's episode of Under the Dome. We'll be back next week, and boy, we'll have some results to tell you, unless everything, you know, comes out even and we have recounts, but we don't think that'll happen. We're going to find out what's going on. Until then, be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. On behalf of Doug Finke and myself, Bernie Schoenberg, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.